3 here on First Up. You're listening to TSN 1050. We are brought to you by LeaseBusters. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakovo on this beautiful Thursday morning in Toronto. James Duthie in 10 minutes. JP Ricciardi coming up in about 35. Earlier, we talked about Toronto's nickname being Hogtown, and a listener, Robert Crocker, writes in, it's named Hogtown after the sprawling stockyards of the William Davies Company, one of Canada's earliest and largest meat packers that slaughtered more than 500,000 pigs for export in 1900. That is part of the nickname of Hogtown. And the reason we bring that up is because Minnesota, the Twins, coming to town tomorrow, and they have rallied around this sausage that, for whatever reason, was brought out in their clubhouse, and I think they've won 12 straight games since, and they've been throwing it around the clubhouse, and it's like a god to them. They bow down to this summer sausage. Now, the concern for Minnesota is, are they going to be able to get it through customs? Like, where would they hide it? Because I don't think they can just
in someone's bag.
Yeah. But you would know this better than anybody. You traveled with NHL teams and charters forever. How strict are the customs agents looking through your stuff? You kind of just walk off the plane, walk on, and you can do whatever you want?
Look, I wouldn't say you can do whatever you want, but there is a little bit more leniency because there's a trust factor, right? You know, the trust factor is guys knowing that, you know, they get better service at the airports with customs, and the teams obviously inform the players of what they can and can't do. It's just you enter at your own risk. And there's nobody that I know that I played with that ever tried to take the risk of bringing in something that they know they're not supposed to. So,
sausage is a little bit different than like alcohol or something like that, right? Like, probably.
Well, but here's the thing, AK. You'll find out when they're in the dugout. Like, if this thing gets passed around, you could ask that question, right?
Again, we encourage the customs agents. I know we have friends in you know, the Nexus department. When I got my Nexus a couple of months ago, the guy behind the counter was a big First Up fan, was very excited to meet me, which was very flattering. Shout out to that fine individual. So we'll see how they decide to handle Minnesota's arrival today ahead of the big 3-game set tomorrow. But the Jays won yesterday, which is awesome. Because, man, did they ever need a win. They had a team meeting yesterday, the discussion of which was not revealed by John Schneider, the manager. But whatever they did yesterday in that team meeting seemed to work out just fine, especially for the team's best players. Springer, Guerrero, and Bichette combined to go 5-for-14, 2 runs driven in, and they really came up big in those big spots, right? Like, Springer had, he was also sick. He had a nice single, stole second, and then scored on one of Guerrero's 3 singles. Bo Bichette got on the board with an RBI, and he got his batting average up to a robust 191. Here is John Schneider, the manager of the Jays, talking about his embattled superstar shortstop.
Yeah, it's huge, man. You know, we know how Bo's feeling. You know, he knows how he's feeling. But to get that hit there, kind of a Bo special, line drive to right field for an RBI. So, you know, he's going to get going. You know, it's just a matter of time. And I know we've been saying that, but it's really a matter of time for him.
Hope so. Been saying it's a matter of time for a long time. But
matter of time for the Blue Jays is very similar to hearing learning lessons from the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You are very correct.
It's like uncle already. Like, nobody wants to hear it anymore. Just go out and do your job, as Bill Belichick famously said all the time. But look, the encouraging thing for the Blue Jays yesterday, not only did they put up 5 runs, they had 12 hits. And they did it against one of Philly's better pitchers with Aaron Nola. So whatever the team meeting was about, it worked for one game. The problem with this Blue Jays team is they have one of these games, but they can't seem to follow it up in the next one. So, you know, like, you remember the game against the Washington Nationals where they broke out on offense, and then Manoa starts the following game, and they have a good offensive outburst, but they can't find a way to win the game because something else didn't click for them. Josh Schneider keeps preaching matter of time. Well, show us. Like, it's a matter of time for you to show us that you could, you know, do this consistently,
string
so
it together.
You can actually start making people believe that it can happen instead of one every four or five games.
Chris Bassitt was excellent yesterday.
He was.
Philly, one of the hottest.
Got out of a huge jam. Remember, it was bases loaded, nobody out in the third inning as the Blue Jays just took the lead 1-0. And he only gave up one run. Left that game tied in the inning, and it just seemed like that was a moment that really reminded the Blue Jays that, okay, we got out of it. Let's go out and do our part now.
Yeah, Romano made you sweat a little bit in the ninth inning there, trying to close it out. Gave up a couple hits. But they closed it out, 5-3 win. Day off today. First of three against the Twins tomorrow down at the Dome. We have our man James Duthie on the other side. We're looking forward to catching up with JD. We saw him at Hamilton on Monday, and there's a lot of you-know-what talk for whatever reason, seemingly every time we see James. But he'll come on the other side. We'll talk about the prospect of Craig Berube becoming the next head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. That at least a possibility if Sheldon Keefe is indeed relieved of his duties, as reported by TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger. James Duthie on the other side, J.P. Ricciardi, still to come.
We're back. It's hour three of First Up here on TSN 1050. The song or special request from our guest, James Duthie, who is on the line now. Daddy, I love him. No easy way to segue into this conversation, James. How are you?
I'm fine. A little sleepy on the Oilers beat last night. But
what time were you done that, James?
Well, the no overtime was a blessing. I think I walked. It wasn't too bad. I walked home. I got home at like two.
We got to push these hits back for JD if he's doing Oilers and Canucks.
I forgot.
Well, the reason why I'm asking. Go ahead, James. Go ahead.
No, it's good. Go ahead. Mine's not functioning.
The reason why I'm asking is because I got asked to do the Vancouver Edmonton game next week. It's a 10 p.m. game on Thursday, and I got to do the show at 6 a.m. So I'm just trying to envision how much sleep I'm going to get that night.
That's called torture.
Yeah.
Just take the day off the show.
Although I would say that
Asia national broadcasts.
You know, it's not bad if it's a. If it ends in regulation, like it ended, I think, 1 o'clock. So that's not bad. But if you got a double overtime or something, you just transition like straight from the game into your shift.
Yeah, I guess that's what I might have to do. And then I got Worlds right after that.
So, James, we got a text from a listener from Guelph just moments ago. Was looking at some property in Alton, Ontario on Sunday, drove by TPC Osprey Valley, saw James Duthie waist deep in the ditch looking for his golf
ball.
Can you confirm this?
That is not. I mean, that would be a fair assessment quite often of my golf game, but you cannot drive by TPC and see the North Course. Okay, so that's
so it's fake.
Logistical fallacy right there.
Well, give us the review. How does the North Course look? Apparently new upgrades, all the new clubhouse there. How's everything at TPC looking right now?
It's good. I saw you guys in Hamilton. I had a good back-to-back of TPC and Hamilton Sunday and Monday, and they're both awesome.
Wow.
Course. Hamilton's probably one of the nicest courses I've ever played. You guys can back that up.
Agreed.
And, you know, the North Course,
the rough
TPC
isn't nice.
Has... You're probably boring all your non-golf listeners to death,
sure.
So we'll do this quickly. But there's three courses at TPC, and the North was probably usually my least favorite of the three. The other two are incredible. North is really good, but they've really souped it up. They've added all these bunkers. They've lengthened it. So when it does host the Canadian Open, which it will, it could be, you know, 7,300 yards or something ludicrous like that. You guys and me would never play off of. So
well, you certainly would never play off that.
But here's the thing. They're building villas and stuff there, right? They're trying to make it like an inland Cabot where people come and stay. So I suggest we have our own little, we got a little villa as soon as they're done.
Play and stay.
A little six rounds in 3 days, you know, first up Ryder Cup.
Oh, buddy, we do the morning show remote there.
Ah.
Jump on the course.
Ah.
All right.
There you go,
it's
buddy.
Done.
I'm in.
It's booked.
Great idea.
It's booked.
Now,
great
we should probably
idea.
Talk
so,
hockey before your listeners turn this off.
Let's do. They probably already did turn. But if you're still with us, we do appreciate it. You mentioned you got home at 2:30 last night because the Canucks and the Oilers puck drop at 10 Eastern. Thank you very much, Gary Bettman. And
10:20.
What a game it was. What 10:20, exactly. What a game it was. Edmonton takes a 4-1 lead, and they just collapse. What happened to the Edmonton Oilers?
It was a weird hockey game. First of all, you're right. You get 40 seconds in. Rick Tocchet had 6 days to get his team ready, and I'm sure he said about 300 times, do not take penalties against these guys. And 40 seconds in, Ian Cole jumps off the bench and they take it too many men and Hyman puts it in the back of the net. And it's just your absolute worst case scenario. And I think that rattled Artur Shelofs, the young goaltender who was so good against Nashville, because he was not great, particularly on the fourth goal, which was just a muffin between his legs. And it was 4-1. And at that point, you know, Carlo knows when you're on the panel, we're going to talk about post game halfway through the game. Because you're not coming back 4-1 against the Oilers. And then it's funny, Dreisaitl, it had been a fairly even game, frankly, to that point. But Dreisaitl got hurt and left. And as soon as that happened, it completely tilted Vancouver's way. I don't know what the numbers are, but I think Edmonton had like 2 shots over, 25 minutes of game time or something. And Dreisaitl came back, but he wasn't quite the same. And it was just Vancouver they completely shut them down. They dominated play. They turned it into like one of those Nashville games where nobody was getting any shots and the only real punches were coming from the Canucks' way. And Skinner was a little shaky down the stretch. And Vancouver forced Edmonton to play Canucks-style hockey. And to me, that was the most impressive thing about game one is that the Oilers never really played their game whatsoever. And it's interesting going forward. I mean, McDavid said afterwards he was fairly happy with their game. It's not like the Oilers were brutal, but that's got to be a shock to the system for that team to blow a 4-1 lead like that, especially, you know, against a really inexperienced rookie goaltender. So be really interesting to see what happens in game two. And Dreisaitl, they all downplayed the injury after the game. McDavid said he's fine. Knobloch said he's fine. Dreisaitl said I'm fine. But I don't know, man. That guy's a tough kid, and back spasms, if that's what it was, they were calling it cramping, I think. But those are tricky things. So hopefully it's not a factor at all the rest of the series, because we want to see a series with healthy Dreisaitl. But I'd be a little concerned going forward if I was Edmonton.
James Duthie, our guest here in the third hour of First Up. I want to shift our focus to Toronto and the Maple Leafs, as our hockey insider Darren Dreger yesterday reporting that it's more likely than not that the Leafs move on from Sheldon Keefe and that Craig Berube is a top candidate to replace him. And I find it really interesting thinking back on all the media appearances that Craig Berube has done over the past couple of months. He's been on this station many times, the rival station, down on Sherbourne as well, and he's been on the NHL on TNT panel. Do you think that's a purposeful thing for Berube and his agency to get him out there and make sure that teams and management and ownership are seeing him all over the different national networks? Is that an idea, or maybe am I overthinking it?
No, you're 100% correct. And look, this has been the game forever. We, in my whatever years on the panel, I guess it's 20 years now, how many ex-coaches have we had come through? Maybe 30, maybe 40. And it's not because they want to hang out with me. It's an old philosophy of get your face out there, remind people that you're smart, and it works. I think we have 100% success rate, I believe, on our time on the panel. That's not even to mention the other networks, of getting guys rehired. Torts didn't want to come on our panel when he wasn't hired, but he figured that was the only way to keep himself out there. And I think his purpose when he came on our panel was to try to show people that he wasn't the Torts you always see in news conferences, that he could be calm and rational. And so that's why they do it. And like I said, it works. Peter Laviolette. We would we had this track record. I'm being facetious here, saying that it was all us, but we would get guys hired within like 3 months, half the time.
And it was what happened to Brucey then? How come it hasn't happened to Brucey then?
Okay, Brucey's our one exception right now, but I still have hope for Brucey. And it's still early, but now Brucey's more towards the end of his career than a lot of the guys did. But you know what? I'm trying to think. You know, Claude Noel, former coach of the Jets, I do not believe got rehired.
Ooh,
so
that's a name.
He had a brief stint on TSN, and that might have been... So, okay, maybe not 100% success rate. Maybe it's 92.3. But... Yeah, that's why they do it. And it amazes me because I'm like you, AK. I'm like, does that really work? Does going on a panel help your odds of getting hired? But I think it's like anything else in the world that you're out there and maybe the owner of the team that's has a vacancy sees you and he says to the GM, you know what? I really like that Paul Maurice guy on the TSN panel. Yeah. Mo came like three times between jobs. And, yeah,
got to keep yourself out of sight, out of mind, right? You keep yourself relevant.
So it's true, and so I don't know if really how much that factors into them getting hired, but it seems to work.
Well, maybe to help Brucey, we should bring in O's the Mentalist and get him to brainwash people.
I wish Brucey would get another gig, but
I don't want him to do. Well, selfishly, I don't want him to do it because I love when he's around at TSN.
I just know how much the guy loves coaching. Like honestly, of all the guys who come through there, I don't know that there's many more that just love the game the way he loves the game. They just love watching every single night. And yeah, so I hope he gets another shot somewhere along the way.
Well, let's hope. Fingers crossed. I'd love to know your thoughts on how Utah is handling their whole name selection. Apparently, it was reported yesterday that they're going to have the Utah on their jersey, and they put out this big survey of names that they're asking their fan base to choose. Have you got a chance to view any of the names that have been selected and which one stands out for you?
Well, I'm just cheering out of pure comedy for the Utah Powder because there's just a lot of jokes that could go there. But I don't know. I like them. I like a lot of them, actually. I kind of like the whole Mammoth and Yeti and stuff like that. I think it's odd to me that you have enough time that you could put a name on and it's going to feel weird. You know, almost like the PWHL where we just called them Toronto and Ottawa and, you know, Minnesota and such. But I think they almost learned something like that. A, business-wise, you can just double your merch, right? You're going to sell a million Utah jerseys the first year. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you put out the logo the next year, everybody's going to have to get a new one. So I think there's probably a reasonable... That's why all the NHL teams use multiple jerseys as many times as they possibly can, the alternate jersey and this jersey and that jersey. So I think that's probably has something to do with it. And I guess secondarily, you just don't want to make that, you don't want to make that mistake of jumping to a name after a 1 week contest and then having regrets for the next 20 years if it sucks.
James, thank you for getting up early for us. We appreciate it. It was great to see you on Monday as well, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. Maybe on the golf course next Friday. Do we still have that standing day with Davis Sanchez? Carlo, unfortunately, is working. He's doing the worlds, but maybe we'll tee it up next
week. Yeah, buddy, I'm in anytime. I kind of got to go bounce off. Oh, yeah, and plus your tee times are great for me. All my buddies want to tee it up at like 7:30, and that's not going to be a functioning purpose for me after a Vancouver Edmonton game. So I'm on all over the Corona Koliakova like noon tee off times.
Noon, let's do it. It's my specialty. Man. It's on. Thanks, Carlo's going to skip his game.
Our boy Uncle Wayno is all over me wanting to get our match settled or at least started.
Let's make it happen. So. I'm good
done.
To go.
Yes.
Any day. Noon it is.
I told him, I said, end of the month when my hockey schedule's done.
Seems reasonable. Thank you, James.
Yeah. Carlo, do not do the Canucks Oilers game followed by radio, followed by the World Championship. Do not do that, okay?
Why? It's one night. I can suck it up, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you're not
boss. You know who's actually affected by that, James, more so than anyone. It's me.
Well,
this guy will be asleep.
Audience.
And the audience. That's a good point. I'll have to.
No. I'm Team TSN, buddy.
Okay.
I do Team TSN. Sleep.
See you, boys.
I'll catch up on my sleep later. See you, buddy.
That's James Duthie from TSN. What a guy. What a guy. Sleeps for 5 hours, and he's like, all right, the phone's ringing.
But here's the thing, AK. I looked at it, and I'm like, well, I'm going to be there already as it is, so why not just. I'm being asked to do a favor, so I'm going to do the favor, and hopefully this favor comes back to me one day, right? You know what I mean?
I like it. It's sports media. It's not easy. You don't just get everything handed to you.
And
on a
the thing
platter.
Is, it's like,
pay
it's,
your
not,
dues.
It's not like I'm like leaving my house at like 9:30 to go to this game. I'm doing the OHL game that night. I'm in the building, stay there for another couple hours, and depending how long the game goes, you know, the following day, that day I have all afternoon to catch up on sleep. And the following day I have all night to catch up on sleep. So you make the best of it, man.
Make the best of what's around.
I'm moving into a hotel tomorrow night for 10 days.
What a dream. Big party in Scarborough, Ontario. Let's go.
Yeah.
The suite at the Delta.
Sleep party.
What a time.
Yes.
What a time. All right. So JP Ricciardi, in about 15 minutes, we'll talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. Their win yesterday, their team meeting, and what it could signify going forward. The day off today ahead of 3-game set against the Minnesota Twins tomorrow. You're listening to the third hour of First Up here on TSN Radio. So we'll talk to JP Ricciardi in about 10 minutes, 13 minutes to be exact. I quickly wanted to play a couple clips from TSN Hockey insider Darren Dreger yesterday talking about Craig Berube and some other candidates that could potentially fill the role of Sheldon Keefe as the Maple Leafs head coach. Again, Dregs yesterday in conversation with Gino Retta saying that it's more likely than not that the Leafs move on from Sheldon Keefe. I know that's being echoed by a number of people around the hockey world. Here is Dreger talking about the candidates for the Leafs coaching job.
I know that Craig Berube just wants to get back in the National Hockey League as a head coach. And the pedigree of Berube, man, that ticks a lot of boxes for all the teams that I've just mentioned, including the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs, if they make the change, are going to need some level of experience. So if it's not Craig Berube, then you look at Todd McClellan, whose name has been out there for a while. And what about Gerard Gallant, who's been on the sidelines? Again, you're talking about experienced NHL head coaches. And I think that that's a very attractive asset as Brad Treliving continues to go through, you know, his deliberation on what to do with the head coaching position in the Maple Leafs.
So the Maple Leafs brass speaks tomorrow at 10:30. I imagine we're Canada's live on TSN Radio. That'd be Keith Pelly and Brad Treliving and Brendan Shanahan. Would your guess be that whoever the new head coach is, if there is a new one, will be there tomorrow?
No. I think tomorrow my guess would be that they'll probably confirm whatever decision is made with Sheldon Keefe, whether it's the speculated decision to move on from Keefe or the decision to keep Keefe. I can't see this organization having Sheldon Keefe go into the offseason as a lame duck, where if they have plans to move on from him, they're going to hold on to him for, you know, another couple weeks, maybe another couple months, and allow all these other positions to fill up while, without giving him a chance to at least explore if he wants another opportunity somewhere. Unless their mind is made up that Craig Berube is their guy, and it sounds like he is on the top of their list if there is a change to be made, then yeah, I would expect something to happen, you know, immediately. But I have a hard time believing that you're going to make an announcement of a guy on the same day while bringing in a new guy. I think tomorrow will be all about hearing what the people in power have to say about this season and hearing what they have to say about what the direction of this team is going to be in the offseason. The fact that Brendan Shanahan is going to be there, I think, confirms to me that they have no plans on removing him, that he's going to continue to be part of the team and the role that he plays and the decision that he makes. And if that's the case, you know, you wonder if we will see any major changes to this roster.
You know what I find interesting about that idea? Shanahan entering the final year of his deal, and the Maple Leafs could very well be making massive decisions for their long-term future, right? With Mitch Marner, John Tavares also entering their final years of their contracts. Ton of free agents, Bertuzzi, Domi, Brody, goes on and on and on. Ilya Samsonov in goal. So, I mean, is it a possibility that Shanahan is extended, or will he play out the final year of his deal? And it's almost a prove-it thing for him and the Maple Leafs and what they do this offseason, how the team performs, not only in the regular season, but the playoffs as well.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a weird spot they find themselves in.
But they let Kyle Dubas play out the end of his contract, right? And they were prepared to keep Kyle Dubas in the fold with a multi-year extension. And look, I kind of agree with what Mike Johnson is saying, and even with what Craig Button has suggested on SportsCenter, that if the plan is to keep certain players around still with this group, you basically you lay the law down right as soon as next week starts, and you say, look, this is our position. We have no intentions of discussing a contract extension. We're still going to honor the year of your contract. You're going to go out and you're going to play the year out. Simple as that. And there is a lot of risk that you take playing that game, because as they saw with William Nylander play out last year, remember when the summer started, there was speculation that the Leafs wanted nothing to do with a contract that even entered the number 10 conversation in AAV.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes out and has a monster start and earns himself an 11.5 AAV over 8 years. And I'm not necessarily believing that any type of contract extension with either player will be determined on numbers, AAV. It will be determined on term for both players. I think Tavares is more of an easier one to negotiate versus a Marner one. But the risk you take with a Marner is if he does play out the year, has a great year, and you still don't want to talk contract extension, and he walks for nothing, well, then you've let an elite asset go for nothing, and you haven't, like, think of all the years this team has invested in assets to build around these guys.
Sounds like the Raptors.
And then you let a guy like that walk for nothing, it would be, you know, detrimental, I think, to the organization. It'd be hugely detrimental.
I don't know what they're thinking, of course, but what I would suggest is the idea of, okay, we're not talking contract extension. And forget Tavares in this conversation. This is a Mitch Marner thing for the most part, because Tavares, whatever his next deal is beyond this $11 million he's earning, will be significantly less. But with
a lot of it
will
be determined what Tavares wants. If he wants to get paid, well, then he's probably going to have to go get it somewhere else.
I don't know what getting paid looks like for Tavares.
But what I'm saying is getting paid is going into the open market and saying, mm-hmm. okay, who really values my services and how much are they willing to pay? I think Tavares is at a point in his career. Look, he's built a beautiful young family. He's committed himself to Toronto. I think it's important to him that finishing his career in Toronto would take priority over anything else, and whatever contract needs to be done to make sure that happens, I think ultimately that's what happens.
Maybe. With Marner, if you're not willing to talk contract with him and extend him, and I don't see why the Leafs would have any interest in doing that at this point in time, that's more of a prove-it thing. Show me in the playoffs that you can do it. I don't care if Mitch Marner has 100 points in the first 10 games of the regular season next year. That doesn't mean anything to me. It's about the playoff performances. I don't see a world in which you go in to next season telling Mitch Marner you're just going to play it out without at least exploring the possibility of what a trade could look like at alternative destinations. It's for me, it's either extend at a number less than 10.9, I think a lot less personally, or let's figure out a trade. Let's figure out your next destination that you could sign, do a sign and trade, whatever it could look like. And I think the Buffalo example with the Vegas Golden Knights with Jack Eichel could be a template for that, and the return was very significant for Buffalo. They get Alex Tuch, they get draft picks. I don't know what the Leafs would be looking for in a Marner deal, and I don't know how that all could play out behind the scenes, but the idea of Marner just playing out the final year of his deal and walking right to free agency is not ideal at all for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the future of that franchise, because he's a valuable asset that has a lot of value. So you're going to let him just play out the final year without the idea of getting anything in return.
It's
I know he controls his own destiny because he has that no move. He could call the shots, but you could also tell Mitch Marner, if you're the Maple Leafs, we're not extending you. We don't really want you on the team anymore. We would like to move on from you. Give us a couple destinations.
I don't know. I don't know if that'll ever be said to Mitch Marner. Of course they would want him on the team. He's an elite player in the league, and I'm doing long term. Yeah. No. I get everything you're saying. Look, whatever happens with Mitch Marner is going to be determined very early on, based on the conversations that they have organizationally with the management, with his representatives, and with Mitch. There has to be a clear indication on both parties on how they feel about each other's future. And again, with Brendan Shanahan in charge still, I have a hard time believing that this team will move off of not having Mitch Marner in the fold here. But in saying that, I think they would be doing themselves a disservice by at least not exploring the idea of what change could look like for this situation with Mitch, and you know, to get put him on, I wouldn't say put him on the market, but at least get a feeler as to what teams are prepared, what type of package they're prepared to put together for him.
Sure, that's already being done.
If they ultimately decide that that's the move that they want to make. I have a hard time believing that as much as everybody wants that to happen, or there's a lot of people that want that to happen, I'm not one in that boat just yet. But again, I'm at a point right now with this team where everything's on the table. You have to explore everything, because if you're going to remove the coach, which it sounds like they are, nothing's been confirmed, then that has to be the start of more change.
It can't just be
him being the only guy.
So we'll see you tomorrow at 10:30. Maple Leafs brass speaks, and maybe we'll get some clarity.
And then
on
we have to wait
till
Monday to talk about it.
And
just
we have
exactly
to wait
what
Monday.
They want.
Or special first up at noon. Just kidding. Not happening. Weekend starts early. We've got JP Ricciardi on the other side, former GM of the Toronto Blue Jays and executive with a number of teams around Major League Baseball. We'll get his thoughts on everything that's going on with the Toronto Blue Jays and pressures on that organization to make certain changes. That's next. Hour 3 continues. You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050. Victory Thursday for the Toronto Blue Jays. We pick up a big win yesterday afternoon. A surprising result against a Phillies team that had been utterly dominant of late. Aaron Nola on the hill for the Phillies, but Chris Bassitt gets it done. A great start for him. The big boys, Vladdy Jr., Bo Bichette, and George Springer all contribute. Setting the stage for the Minnesota Twins to come to town tomorrow after day off today for the Birds. Let's welcome in former Blue Jays GM and host of the Brushback with JP. It is JP Ricciardi back on First Up. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Excellent, thank you. So I'm very curious about your take on the pressures that Ross Atkins is facing, the general manager of the Jays, a role that you occupied at one time. A lot of people are very upset about the team's performance, and rightfully so, calling for changes. How do you, as a manager, try to maybe keep an even keel and not overreact to a really slow start to the season, or maybe an overreaction is appropriate?
Well, you know, what's going to happen if they get rid of Ross Atkins? Is it going to change what's happening on the field? So I think, you know, talking about getting rid of the GM is something maybe they should discuss in the off season. I think the biggest problem is just getting the offense going. And I think, you know, one of the problems with the Blue Jays offense is it's basically centered around two players. It's Bichette and Guerrero. And that team goes as they go. So Bo's going to be fine. He's going to come along. And I think Vlad will too. But it's pretty magnified right now because the rest of the lineup is not contributing as well. And it's not a deep lineup. If you look at the Braves, you look at the Phillies, you look at the Dodgers, they have a 1-7 that pretty much can carry the lineup if 2 and 3 are down. The Blue Jays don't have that. So it's been magnified with the two players who haven't really performed well yet. And I do think they are going to perform. But the question you have to ask yourself is how far can you let it go in the sense of making a trade or trying to add something, because the division can get away from you fast. So I don't think the GM is the problem in the sense right now, because I don't think you can actually solve a problem by getting rid of the GM. But in the offseason, that's going to depend on how the team plays.
And I'm glad you brought me there, JP, because the patience for this fan base is being tested, and being tested at a very, very, impatient way. And so when you see the team struggle as much as they are offensively, as a former GM, is there a timeline you give yourself as to how long you need to watch this before you actually think about making a move?
Well, I think you have to just keep your finger on the pulse. I mean, if you're playing like this in June, you're probably thinking about, okay, this might not be our year, and how do I salvage it? And it might be you trade one of those guys that you don't think you're going to be able to long term. I mean, the assets they have are some of the pitching and obviously Bo and Vlad. And if you're not going to extend those guys long term, then you might want to think about being proactive and trading them. If the pitching is the same thing. So they do have some assets that people would like, people would want. But that comes down to the organization, where they think they are, and if they're willing at that point to maybe raise the white flag and say, we got to prepare for next year. I don't think they're there yet. I think the All-Star break. But you look at Miami. Miami's already traded their best hitter, and San Diego's been pretty aggressive by going out and getting him. So there are some teams that are willing to deal. I just don't think the Blue Jays, being fair to their fan base at this time, are in that position.
J.P. Ricciardi, our guest, former Blue Jays GM, the host of the Brushback with J.P. The Jays, a negative 44 run differential. That's second worst in the American League behind just the Chicago White Sox, 17-20. They're 7.5 games behind the Baltimore Orioles for first in the AL East. A lot of people are clamoring for a change with the hitting coach, Guillermo Martinez, who's been around for a couple of years. In your experience, what would that do, if anything, to the approach of the plate for some of the Blue Jays hitters?
Well, I don't know the hitting coach, but I'm sure he's working his butt off, and it's probably driving him as nuts as everybody else. Having been around big league teams for a long time, I see how hard those coaches work, and I know that guy is probably not sleeping at night. So he's doing everything within his power. I don't really know what that would do outside of probably show the fan base that we're trying to do something. And it's hard to come in now and have a whole new philosophy to someone. You don't have that rapport with Vlad, with Bo, with all the other hitters. You don't know what they like to do. It's a little bit of a panic move, I think. The bottom line is Bo Bichette's a good player and Vlad Guerrero's a good player. You just got to ride it up with them, because I just don't think right now anything drastic is going to get them going. You got almost, it's got to let the time take its, you got to ride it out, in other words. And I think it's easier said than done, because you don't want the division to get away from you. But let's face it, if Mookie Betts goes down, if Freddie Freeman goes down, if Schwarber goes down, if Harper goes down, none of these teams are built to carry a lineup without their major guys. And Blue Jays, it's magnified even more, because the lineup is really centered around two guys in that deeper lineup. So you just got to grin and bear it. That's the way it is right now.
JP, in your experiences, have you ever found yourself dealing with a situation like the Blue Jays are with Alek Manoa, where this guy was an ace stud pitcher and has completely lost his game in the last year and a bit? And I know they're trying to build him back up, and he got his first crack at the majors this season on the weekend. And, he was pitching good. The offense was going. He had a chance to leave the game with a lead. They let him in there. They hung him out to dry. They let him leave the inning with a trailing instead of leading. And you wonder what that does for his confidence. Have you ever had a situation like this, and how would you handle trying to build that player back up?
Well, I think, one of the problems in the big leagues is it's not a testing ground. You're playing for results every night. And if you're going to do what they did with Manoa, my suggestion would be to get him out when he's feeling good, so he can leave on a high note, because he wasn't actually dominating in the minor leagues before he came back up. So
right.
I thought it was a little bit of a panic move that they brought him up there trying to catch lightning in a bottle, but they did. And at that point, my suggestion to the manager would be, if he's going good, if we get three innings out of him, in the fourth inning, you see he gets maybe the first guy's on. You got to be in a position to let him leave on a high note. But I think the Giants just did the same thing. They brought up Mason Black with a really good arm, but the Giants minor leaguers don't pitch more than four innings, and he pitched really well for four innings, and in the they decided to run him up for the fifth inning, something he hasn't done in the minor leagues, and he got, you know, totally pounded. And instead of leaving on a good note with his first major league start, he leaves on a negative note. And I think that's the one thing. You know, Manoah is like kid gloves right now. So any positive that you could have him walk off the mound feeling good about is something he can build off of. So I think that would have been the one suggestion I would have made to my manager, is make sure he walks off the mound feeling good if we're in that position.
JP, we did see Jackson Holliday, the Uber prospect, shortstop for second baseman for the Baltimore Orioles, get called up in the early part of the season. He really struggled. He's back in AAA now. The Pittsburgh Pirates are calling up the top pitching prospect in Major League Baseball, and Paul Skeens, who is an absolute freak, throws like 101, a monster from LSU. What are you expecting to see from Skeens in the early part of his MLB career?
Skeens is going to be a star. I got to see him last year, LSU at Auburn. I think the one thing he's going to have to add to his repertoire, not so much add, but the one thing he's going to have to just get a different feel for and a different look to the hit is his changeup. It's a power fastball. It's a power breaking ball. He's a big guy. He's extremely strong. It's menacing. And he's going to do well. He is the best amateur pitcher I've seen in the last 10 years. Probably the last guy was Strasburg. So barring injury, this guy is going to win Cy Young and staying healthy. He's like Garrett Cole. So he's going to hit the ground running. And Holiday's going to be a star. I think they brought him to the big leagues too soon. But he got a taste of it, and he'll be better for it. And, you know, so listen, sometimes you think you're ready for the big leagues, you know, but the big leagues aren't ready for you, you know? And I think sometimes the young kids just, you know, the big leagues are tough, you know? It's not the Little Sisters of the Poor League. So, but Skeens is going to hit the ground. I'll be shocked if he doesn't hit the ground running, but at some point he'll be a Cy Young Award winner.
JP, thank you so much for the time. Again, check out the Brushback with JP. Follow him on Twitter at Ricciardi JP. Thanks so much for the time again. We'd love to do this again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too. JP Ricciardi. When you were 18 years old, you had that incredible start to Leafs training camp. You make the team. Did you think at the time, like, you were ready to be a full-time NHL player?
No, because everything was happening so fast for me, and I was still living, you know, as a kid, you know, in a junior hockey lifestyle. And I've always, like, when I got drafted in the first round and then when I made the Maple Leafs, I envisioned me being an NHLer for a long time, but things change year to year, right? I mean, the first couple of years in my Maple Leafs career was very challenging, right? With some of the injuries that I had to deal with and overcome and persevere through, and some of the comments that I had to, you know, have thick skin about. And it's a lot for a young player to handle, especially back in the day where there isn't as much, you know, there isn't as many resources as there are available to players nowadays that can help them deal with and cope with this a lot better. So, yeah, I mean, even when I played, you know, minor hockey when coming into my draft year, it's not like nowadays where the minute you put your kid into hockey, it's like you have to commit yourself to it like 24/7, 7 days a week, because people believe that the more you do, the quicker you're going to get there, which is such a false narrative to believe in, because there is no quick way to get to professional hockey. The timeline is always going to be the same. It's more of how the individual wants to prepare himself for it. And when you get closer to, you know, that phase, because you're getting older and you're playing, you know, with better competition every year, it starts to become more real. To me, at that age where kids are getting drafted nowadays, I just played hockey to play because I was having fun and just wanted to play with my friends and be as best as I can be. And then everything else came with it,
because
you're starting to learn about everything, because everything was starting to be presented to you instead of being accessible everywhere you look. Like nowadays, you know, minor hockey stats are being kept. You can watch minor hockey games with this live bar and video access. You never had access to any of that. It's so easy to get a hold of people now with social media and the way people are easily contacted. Back then, it was like nobody even had a cell phone. So it was different. It was absolutely different. And then, you know, I get hit with being drafted by the Maple Leafs, and I'm walking into a locker room of guys that I spent the year before watching on TV every night, and it's like, whoa, holy crap. This is the real world.
I had Matt Sundin jersey on my wall now. His stall
is different. It's absolutely different. And I'm starting to see a little bit right now with my son entering his second year of hockey, where everyone's like, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this. I go, you got to leave me alone, dude. Like, leave me and leave my kid alone. My kid will go at the pace that he's prepared for right now, not at the pace that you think he needs to be at. And I think that's where people get sort of confused in all this, or caught up in all this, is that they're going at this incredibly fast pace, but they're not ready for it, and their kid's not ready for it.
That's exactly it. That's exactly, and everyone's, you know, like, you just got to go at your own pace, and there's no right way to do it. Maybe there is a wrong way to do it, but
well, the wrong way to do it is just doing nothing at all. But if you if you commit a little bit at a time to it, you know, you go at the pace that your child is telling you that they're capable of going at. Because you got to remember, they're at the end of the day, they're kids.
They are children. They don't prepare their own meals or anything. It's just like really what they do is they come home and you and Gina would take care of Leo, and you know, he would do his own thing. He has to focus on what's really important, and you just got to focus on having fun. I think that's ultimately at the end of the day what is the most pressing when it comes to a conversation like this. This hour, first up, brought to you by Lease Busters. Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. Talk to Danny Green in about 30 minutes. Hour 4 is next.